Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
For a while now, a listener has been tugging at my sleeve, telling me she has a terrific story to tell. And she does. This is the fourth day of Hanukkah. Hers is ultimately a Hanukkah story, but before that, it's a story of intergenerational friendship and difficult questions about elder care and who should pay for it. But it begins as a chance encounter when then 80-something Aaron Lieb stopped Susan Kushner Resnick at a Jewish community center and asked of the infant on her hip, "What's his name?" His name was Max. Susan was struggling with postpartum depression after his birth. Aaron, it would soon be revealed, was living with the post-traumatic stress of having survived the Holocaust, something Susan thought she had no direct connection with. Susan's family became the family Aaron lost, and the often irascible Aaron became a way for Susan to examine her faith. Her memoir is called You Saved Me Too, What a Holocaust Survivor Taught Me About Living, Dying, Fighting, Loving, and Swearing in Yiddish. It's written in the form of letters to the now-deceased Aaron Lieb. He died last year, and Susan joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
I should say welcome back, because you were here to talk about your postpartum book.
Yes.
You say he, in a way, helped you out of it. How did you put it?
Yeah, that he kind of sanded down my rough edges a little bit. Meeting him every week for coffee and having a purpose helped. If anyone listening has been depressed, you kind of feel nothing. And to have this new person in your life who's so exciting and almost like a crush was like my first feelings after that.
Well, he's 40 years older than you. What was it?
Yeah, 44.
Well, you have a husband that you love and you know, this new baby. What was it?
You know, I didn't know at the time. Now I know we had so much in common. I mean, I kind of think we were soulmates. We were very, very similar in how we looked at the world, how cynical we were, how neurotic. So it was like meeting someone familiar.
Well, and he would have depression as well, or even, you know, post-traumatic stress. Nobody knows this at first. You know, he's got all these maladies. He's a 911 repeat caller, you know. But then you write, "I knew what was wrong. Your mother, your father, your brother and his wife, and their baby." It's hard to read.
Do you want me to?
Yeah.
I knew what was wrong. Your mother, your father, your brother and his wife and their baby, your sister and your other sister and your baby sister, the girl who brought you the bread in the ghetto, your grandmothers, the kids you sneaked glimpses of movies with, everyone.
All dead.
All dead. He was forced to watch hangings. His father was beaten up for missing curfew because he had to get his horse and cart into the barn. And also, his whole town was killed on Purim, which is supposed to be a very happy, festive holiday.
Where was this?
He lived in Zgliń, Poland, which the closest city was Lodz. And it was one of those kind of fiddler-on-the-roof-esque little Polish towns. And he and his brother and sister got taken for slave labor because they were in their late teens, early 20s. And the rest of the family stayed in this ghetto they had made. And eventually the whole town was taken to Chełmno, where they were put into trucks and gassed.
He and his brother, Bill, barely eke out their existence. Who are you at this point, Susan? You didn't come from a Jewish family where it was imprinted on you never again. You know, this is how you describe yourself. Tell us a little more about who you are as you're meeting Aaron.
I am a person who goes to temple on the high holidays and feels like a really bad Jew because, you know, I don't know the prayers or how to bend at certain ones. I just felt like I was really bad at it and kind of ashamed whenever I went into a synagogue that I didn't know what was going on.
And yet, you are a Jew who starts doing a very, very good deed. You know, what is the word? It's
a mitzvah.
A mitzvah.
Thank you.
Yeah, for taking care of this Holocaust survivor who's getting increasingly ill, has no one. And because of that, you start examining your, I guess, your Jewishness, your connection with this community. Tell us about that.
All along, I thought he should be treated like a king for what he went through. And also, his whole life after the war was no picnic either. He was always poor and had a terrible marriage and not incredibly happy. So I thought he deserved this wonderful death. And when I tried to get him help, I was told he's nothing special and we can't really help, and you have to go through the regular channels. And I thought they would roll out the red carpet for him.
These are Jewish nursing homes and philanthropic organizations you thought would help with some money.
Yes, yes.
Well, speaking of money, but let's put that thread of the story aside for a moment. Speaking of money, you also tell us about payments that Aaron is getting from the German government.
Reparations money, yeah. He started getting them, I think, in either 49 or 51. All survivors do. It's a little bit of money that, depending on the strength of the dollar and the Deutschmark, they get a certain amount every month.
What did this mean to him?
You know, he used to say they could give me $1 million and it wouldn't matter at all. But it gave him a little bit of power, and he would give that money away all the time. I think because he had no power in the world, being able to help those who were less fortunate than he was probably made him feel good. So, for example, he had a girlfriend, an elderly woman who had some strokes, and she needed some home care, and he paid for that. So he didn't have any savings.
Yeah. Well, and put that threat aside, because that becomes important later as you're trying to get him care. But you were saying the payments seemed to give him this little bit of power, as did just his very existence. He's alive. And you write your book in the form of letters to various people. You write to his late mother, to Adolf Hitler. Do you mind reading that?
Sure. Dear Adolf, this morning, Aaron Lieb, graduate of Auschwitz, who your staff left to die in Dachau in April of 1945, turned 91 years old. You lose. Regards, Sue.
Satisfying?
Yeah, it was great. I always had a strange fascination with the Holocaust. I mean, I read all children's books about it and took classes in college on it and just had this fascination. And maybe that's why I was drawn to Aaron in the first place.
Well, I'm wondering, too, you claim a lot not to have any, you know, particular tie to it, but you do. You're Jewish.
And, yes.
And at one point you talk about, you know, practicing what it must be like to wake up knowing that someone was coming to kill you just because you're not sure they might not again.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess I would think that most Jewish people think that. Just I always put myself in their place because I thought, well, it's just a few generations, two generations removed from me, which is why I wrote to his mother, because I felt like as a mother of a son, I could have been her.
As someone who says, you know, you really don't have a connection. Well, you did. You do. A deep one. And then here's Aaron making you more conscious of it. But how did your husband, David, feel? How does your family feel about that?
My husband adored him. Aaron would always say to him, if I were 30 years younger, you'd be in trouble. And then after he died, my husband David said, you know, he was not kidding about that.
Susan Kushner-Resnick, her memoir, You Saved Me Too, tells the story of her friendship with Aaron Lieb, a survivor of the Holocaust. When we come back, navigating the healthcare system for Aaron and how Hanukkah figures into all of this. That's in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Susan Kushner-Resnick, who tells of her chance meeting with a stranger, Holocaust survivor Aaron Lieb. In the memoir, You Saved Me Too, What a Holocaust Survivor Taught Me About Living, Dying, Fighting, Loving, and Swearing in Yiddish. He became a part of her young family, sharing holidays, tears, and laughter. Once when he was being particularly difficult in the hospital, a nurse threatened to call security, to which he replied, what are they going to do, send me to Auschwitz? This is the part of their story that is part Hanukkah miracle, part end-of-life care. Remember, a part of the Hanukkah story is the oil, only enough to light a lamp for one night, but it stretches to eight. And remember, Susan said Aaron received small reparation payments from the German government, but he gave them away. Then when he was failing and she was running the gauntlet of elder care, desperate to get him a bed in a Jewish nursing home, there were questions about whether he was trying to hide his assets. Medicaid denied him. Susan then had to raise money and became more than a little disillusioned with Jewish philanthropic organizations, which turned her down. Susan and Aaron both had fissures in faith. So, Susan, pick up there. Aaron had no trust. You write, he wasn't so into Judaism anymore. He tells you at one point, He didn't go to synagogues because the Nazis took women that were pregnant and babies and killed them. You had to figure out what was that about?
I guess maybe self-protection.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what I felt, too. If I remained ambivalent about being Jewish, then they couldn't get me if they ever came.
Well, and the trust. He was telling you at one point he was sure he was having a heart attack. You and the doctors didn't think he was. And then he said, listen, in the concentration camp, there was a man who had a big stomach. The guard said it was because he ate too much.
Yeah. The truth was he was starving to death and died the next day.
Yeah.
So that's why he didn't believe the doctors. Actually, in that situation, the doctors and I were trying to convince him to take antidepressants. And he didn't think anything was wrong with him. Later, he agreed.
Yeah. Well, the reason I'm plumbing this complicated relationship you both have with your faith, something pretty wonderful happens. You write a letter to a rabbi?
Yes, to my rabbi of the congregation that I don't attend that often in Sharon, Massachusetts, asking for the help I needed to raise the money to get Aaron into this nursing home. And then on the last day of Hanukkah of 2007, I reached into my mailbox and pulled out a 4-inch stack of envelopes full of checks, $5, $200.
How much came?
That day, I think I needed $7,000, and it added up to just about that. And then I called the nursing home, and they had been telling me that they were just waiting for a bed to open up, which may indeed have been true. But within an hour of me telling them I had this money, a bed did open up.
What did the people say who sent the money?
Little things like, you know, I was an immigrant, so I understand, or a lot of people didn't even write a note. They just stuck a check in an envelope.
What does that do for you? I mean, I we could cue the music of the choir now as as Susan is, her faith is reborn. But that, I don't know, is that too cliched?
No, I don't think so, because it gave me faith in people and showed me the big difference between individuals and institutions. I'm sure that most of the people who disappointed me in the institutions are wonderful, big-hearted people, but somehow being attached to an institution and a bureaucracy made them not behave as maybe they would have when they were individuals.
What difference did Aaron make for you?
He made my life more interesting. He taught me to be brave, and he put me into situations unknowingly that forced me to learn to do the right thing and have value. You know, he gave me value because he loved me just because I was there in that lobby.
He didn't have to. You weren't family.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess he could say the same about me.
Well, you wrote to him in, again, your posthumous letter in a book. You had a bad life. I want a good death for you. Was it?
Yes. I think he really caught a break at the end. I always promised him that he would not die alone. He was terrified of that. He actually mentioned once that he was afraid of being thrown on the side of the road. So I was standing there when he died. I don't think he suffered. He was telling jokes the night before. And so at least he got that in this world.
Do you miss him?
Yeah, I think about him a lot. I actually have his voice on tape, and I haven't been able to listen to them yet, but now I think I'm ready to hear his voice again.
Maybe part of the Hanukkah celebration, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. And I think I'd have to do it alone first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I miss being with him and just his goofiness and his laughter. I don't miss the, you know, phone calls, you have to get over here, I'm dying kind of thing. But yeah, I do miss having him in the world.
Yeah. Well, and where are you on your faith? You once said you felt like a bad Jew.
I feel like an okay Jew now, not a bad one.
And how are you with God? Because you write at certain times in the book about, I thought I felt God once during my daughter's bat mitzvah, but then I didn't feel it again. I'm not sure, you know, if God has any control over anything. You know, maybe it's a little more random than we think. But I'm thinking, it's like that joke where someone gets to heaven and say, God, where were you? And God says, what are you kidding? And in your case, what are you kidding? I sent you Aaron.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think God and I are getting along pretty well these days. She's cool.
And did she send you Aaron, do you think?
Oh, well, that's what he said, that that God sent Maxilla and me to him. But yeah, I think that if you believe in that stuff, and I guess I do, she somehow put us together.
In fact, you at one point write, maybe God had given you a test in the form of Aaron.
Yes, to see if I was a good person or not.
Would you just walk by him?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You say you hope you pass.
I hope.
I think you passed.
Thank you.
That's Susan Kushner-Resnick. Her book is You Saved Me Too, What a Holocaust Survivor Taught Me About Living, Dying, Fighting, Loving, and Swearing in Yiddish. Susan, thanks so much, and happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Happy Hanukkah to you and everyone else.
Okay. Still ahead today, fraught negotiations in D.C., not over the fiscal cliff, over two key parts of health care reform. What's your state doing? What does it matter? That's after the latest news. Here and now.